is your emergency?
Somebody came in and broke in.
Ma'am?
Police officers in the front door.
We walked in here and did it, Dan. There's nothing
but lamb. Ma'am, is the police officer there?
Yes.
Okay, go talk to him, okay?
Yeah.
Yes, that's okay. Go talk to him, though. Okay?
I was hoping you'd skip it.
Nope, no skipping on the mom saying. All right, so we are live. This is episode, I think we're at episode 5, but this is our third case for our mini-series that has turned into a ginormous series on guilty or not guilty. This case is probably going to cause a lot of controversy when we give our opinions, but before such matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need to do our introductions. We don't have Elena with us today, but we got mom. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And let's see.
And Sherry.
I have a mom saying first. She's a master of sugar alchemy, the queen of anti-jogging, and the family chef extraordinaire. Mom's secret ingredient, love with a sprinkle of sugar, of course.
Those are cute you've done. I like those. Those are cute.
Oh, goodness. All right.
Though
so
I didn't miss them.
Sugar.
Yeah.
Yes. So we got some hot cocoa.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, now, is this the cocoa from Greece?
From Greece. Mm-hmm. All the way from Greece.
Very excited. Okay.
We didn't.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Wow.
Oh, wow. We got some horror movie.
Oh,
Nightmare
yeah.
on Elm Street Steven's situations. Cup. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good.
That's delicious.
Not too strong either. Marshmallows add to it.
Delish. Good one, Mom. I'd have to give it a 5.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's good.
So this case is the Darlie Routier case. And this one is on the level, I would say, of Michael Peterson, Scott Peterson, when it comes to the controversy surrounding it.
Just
and,
a woman.
Huh?
But a woman.
Yes. Yeah, we definitely have a female suspect in this case. It was the stabbing death of her two sons, Devin and Damon. Devin was 6. Damon was 5. We've got some photos here. Wow, I just stuck to my papers, I think, from the facial we had.
which is so
we
relaxing.
Have facial faces, by the way, on the video.
And hair.
Yes.
And hair.
This is a... Before we get too far into the case, this is an early picture of them when the boys were, gosh, he's probably a toddler, maybe 2.
At that.
Yeah.
And then are on the site.
And then we have them in their new home where the crime took place.
Roulette.
How far away is that?
Oh, it's up there by Plano. And
okay. And then this is them with their little bunny rabbit.
Oh.
And then that was the video of the two of them was seen all over TV. So that's a very
so
common
cute.
TV image that most people have seen. And I'm gonna reserve my opinion of her innocence or guilt for the end. This is probably one of the most investigated episodes I've done where I physically ran how far she ran. Or the perpetrator would have ran to deposit the sock. I also experimented, and I have a funny story with a knife. And so I was trying to figure out her wounds and a lot of the other stuff because I wanted to be very sure in what I thought. So with that being said, as far as, you know, she was attacked, you've got the two boys, where are you at as far as innocence or guilt?
Oh, I think she's guilty.
Okay.
I don't know. And then I hear something on the media, which you can't trust, and, you know, and different, then it sways me to maybe innocent, but the screen is what...
Got you.
Yeah.
And that's a good point because the media went crazy on this, and... that's where it gets a little bit murky, the details, because if you look at her case, if you look at Scott Peterson's case, and even Michael Peterson, you either have a website that's for them, and it's 100% they're innocent, or you have one where they're like the devil.
Right.
And it's 100% against them. And so I think the media kind of feeds into that. So based on their narrative, that's that they want to portray, that's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, I hadn't heard of this case until I saw a true crime documentary on it where Darley was interviewed from death row.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence in the documentary, it definitely caused, speaking of, serious doubts as to her guilt. But she as a person bugged me. There are a couple things. She was almost too controlled and too soft-spoken.
Right.
That women will use their voice and they will use their facial expressions to convince others of what they want them to believe. And it seemed a little too contrived.
Though, when all this happened, so of course it happened here in Texas, so we had a lot of coverage, but she did talk like that all the time. It was her way of talking.
Yeah. I would say maybe is a little bit softer than mm-hmm. the, because I watched other videos of her. She would cry at the right times, mm-hmm. but she would also smile at times that actually made me think she was guilty. Because one thing I've noticed is if someone has done a crime and they think they've gotten away with it or they think that they're fooling someone, they'll actually smile like they can't help it at inappropriate times. So if you go to Richard Ramirez before he was, mm-hmm. I think he died before he was executed of cancer, but they interviewed him and I was happy to see that Californian tax dollars paid for his teeth work. But anyway.
Right.
So he asked him, you know, do you regret, you know, do you feel bad for what you did? And right after he started smiling, then caught himself. And he said, of course.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
People like him. But I also know from experience, too, people will smile or giggle when they're nervous.
Yeah, no, that was not this.
Mm-hmm.
So she would smile at times. It kind of made me wonder. Now, of course, this is just, you know, something that I observed when I watched her, but I would say that during that time, definitely more prone to the innocence thing because of a few things. But I need to give a shout out to the Prosecutor's Podcast again, because what I like about their podcast is they go way in depth, and they're prosecutors. So they're not there to push a story. They're there to lay out the facts like they would in a case, except they have the freedom to go deeper, and then they'll often share their opinions. And so I learned more about this case than anywhere else, and I felt like I could trust what they were saying because they don't have an agenda. They're just laying out the case. I also went to some court records. I have the 911 call as well. And I was able to take a deep dive into this case. So we'll see what our listeners think. We'll have this on YouTube, and of course the episodes will be, you know, wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as outlineofamurder.com.
I like when they put requests in or information of what they think or found.
Yeah. We're about to do a bonus on JonBenet probably this summer, spring or summer.
Right.
By the way. So okay, on June 6, 1996, around 2:30, police received a 911 call from a home on Eagle Drive, which is an affluent part of Rowlett, Texas. They have about 35,000 people there. Is there any large cities around them, or is it just...
It's sort of in the country, but there are some around them, not okay. too far.
Okay.
I haven't been there in years. It's probably grown up by now, for sure.
They got a call from a frantic woman saying she and her sons had been attacked. Police arrived and found a disturbing scene. 5-year-old Damon was gasping for air, having been stabbed in the back, and 6-year-old Devin was obviously dead, lying where he had fallen asleep earlier. Darley had a cut across her neck where she was holding a towel to trying to stymie the blood. And I want to warn, we're going to go into more detail because we're going to have to as far as the wound. So listener, beware. Also, if there's any children, you probably don't want them to hear some of these details. But it's very upsetting. Blood was everywhere. The scene was very chaotic. And then Darley and Darren are screaming at each other during this chaotic time. And then their baby, He was only 7 months old. He was still upstairs in his crib. So the layout of the sleeping arrangements at the time of the crime is Darren was upstairs with the baby, mm-hmm. and then Darlie was downstairs with the boys, okay? And we've got... I want you to tell me something that you notice in one of these photos. Okay. So this one is where the oldest boy is, Devin. Do you notice his body is under the blanket?
Yeah, I see that.
Don't you find that interesting?
Well, I know from podcasts we've done, usually when they cover the body or the face, it's usually a family member.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of unusual.
It is. You can't see his head at all. So it just makes me wonder, like, was he completely under the covers like some kids will sleep and stabbed that way? Or was he covered after? As we go through the crime... we're going to see that he probably was covered after because of the wounding.
Well, yeah, and they would have holes in the blanket.
Yeah. So they see him. He's under the blanket. He's obviously dead. Mm. On the 911 call and in communicating with the officer, she said that she saw an intruder in the home. The police immediately followed protocol to search for an intruder before they deal with the scene. So they don't know where the intruder is. Mm-hmm. They can't even address the wounded until they make sure the house is clear.
They could have a weapon.
Exactly. Yeah. And one officer said it was so loud because of all the yelling, he was having a rough time concentrating looking for the intruder.
Wow.
And
from Darlie?
Darlie and Darren. Screaming and mm-hmm. yelling and... So once they determined that the intruder was not in the house, they then turned their attention to Damon because he was still breathing. And they got the paramedics in. And I guess they had to wait for the house to clear before the paramedics could come in and tend to the victims. CPR was performed on him, but he was gone.
Oh.
Now, if I can find the link again, I'll put the 911 transcript up of Darlie on the phone. But it's the typical, you know, what is your emergency? Someone came here, they broke in, they just stabbed me and my children. So she's talking about that, my little boys. And then she gives the address. And, oh my God, my babies are dying. And then something you can't hear. Oh my God, something you can't hear. Thought he was dead. Oh my God. More stuff she can't, I don't even know. Who is breathing? Are they laying there? I mean... she's kind of going through some of the you know, describing the scene. Oh, mm-hmm. I thought he was dead.
That's an unusual thing to say.
That's an interesting thing.
Unless he moved.
Well, we'll find out. He was crawling for his life.
Mm.
And then Darren is yelling, what happened? What happened? Who did? Like, you know, he goes to bed and he comes down to his family practically slaughtered. So she tells him to hold on. I saw them, Darren. They came in here. I don't know who it was. We've got to find who it was. She said some man came in, stabbed my baby, stabbed me. I was up. I was fighting. He ran through the garage, threw the knife down. My babies are dying. They're dead. Oh, my God. And then at 2:38, they asked where, you know, if anybody else was in the house. And she said, yeah, my husband. He just ran downstairs. But... this is like, you know, I think what happened is she supposedly wakes up, she starts screaming when she realizes what happened, and that then wakes up Darren, mm-hmm. and he comes down when she's on the phone. She said, I feel really bad. I feel like I'm dying. There's a dog barking. You know, look for a rag, you know, lay down, sit down, put it, you know, there's a knife, don't touch anything. And then she said, well, I already touched it, and I picked it up. And then she keeps, you know, going back and forth to the babies. And then she said, somebody who did it intentionally walked in here and did it, Darren. So there's just a lot of back and forth, a lot of chaos. But there were just those few phrases that made me a little bit suspicious. I thought he was dead. So does that mean Darren's trying to figure out why she's not helping the one that's alive? Because she thought he was dead? Or they see him moving and breathing, and she's like, I thought he was dead.
I go towards that one.
It's just weird.
More so, though it is sort of unusual.
So this is Devin. Damon. It's just disturbing. That's him. They're trying to save his life here, and these are the stab wounds on him. He's already deceased, but you can see the back, which will be
horrible.
Important.
Just horrible.
There's also blood on the couch area, but these files as well will be very important.
She was laying on the couch, wasn't she?
Yeah. And then here, there's blood. So what they think is that Damon was sleeping right here, and then Devin was on over on the other side. And I think there's one of Devin where they have him out. Yeah, they've gotten him out of the blanket. So he was definitely covered, but there were some wounds down in this area that we're going to discuss. But it's a horrible crime scene, and it's really sad what happened to the babies. So she said that she had fallen asleep on the couch downstairs in the, it's like a living room or a family room. And I have pictures of the house. It's actually up for sale. It looked like a really nice house.
Oh, it's up for sale now?
Yeah. But I liked that it had a picture. So this would be where they were sleeping. Mm-hmm. So you see the kitchen is off on that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kitchen is like a galley style kitchen. And so the garage is that mm-hmm. direction, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that this is the other side of the living room. And I'm not sure what that room is. It may be a separate room off of the foyer. But if you look, I want to keep the kitchen one up. So they're in this area. And then she gets up. She says she sees an intruder in the kitchen. She gets up and she runs through and sees the knife and picks it up and puts it on the counter. Okay?
Well, it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she said that the boys, they were watching TV and they were laying on the floor with their pillows and blankets, which I remember doing that as a kid.
Right.
She said that she woke up when Damon touched her, the youngest one, and called to her. And that's when she noticed an intruder in the house. She stated that she told Damon to stay behind as she got up and chased, quote, a long-haired white man wearing a baseball cap, t-shirt, and jeans, fleeing through the kitchen and out the utility room, which I believe is the door,
because
that would probably be the dining room back there.
And the window that goes towards outside.
Yeah, and the door into the utility room is a room that has a door that goes to the garage.
Garage, yep.
And in the utility room, they have their washing machine and dryer and, you know, normal items. She said that the intruder stopped dropped the butcher knife used in the attack on the utility room floor. So she said that she picked it up and laid it on the kitchen counter. So she's saying that she chased him to the utility room. He escapes out the garage. He drops it on the floor, which I believe I have a picture of where that dropped. That looks like the floor there. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I thought she picked it up.
That's what she said. And there is a picture of where it is on the counter.
That's not a counter. That's a floor.
I think it's the utility room floor, actually.
Oh.
Because that looks like linoleum. I don't think that's a counter. But there is a different one where it is on the counter, but I may not have that one. So there is a photo.
That's confusing. Because if she picked it up, why is it on the floor?
Yeah, maybe, that's true because it's a crime scene photo.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I don't think they put linoleum on, obviously, countertops. But that looks like a floor, right?
It does to me.
Okay. So here we have the layout. So you've got the fireplace like we saw, and then you have Damon, the youngest, is over on this side. Her head is on that side as well. Then you have the coffee table, and then you have, Devin's there, and then, and then Damon's over here.
On the left side of the couch.
And the reason sort of he's behind. There is he crawled.
Oh.
Okay? So Devin's already dead. Damon had been in the living room, and by the time the paramedics and police got there, he had crawled to that area right there trying to get away from his attacker.
That's horrible.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely horrible. They were terrified. So she picked up the knife, laid it on the kitchen counter, which is weird because, like you said, there's even a one where the knife is not on the utility room floor that has the outline of the knife. So I'm confused, too, as to why we have that situation. I don't know. It looks like a floor to me. So she stated four times to everyone that she picked up the weapon. Now, that can be normal. You know that you contaminated the crime scene because you picked up the weapon. But it can also be she's trying to have a reason why her prints are on the knife, which I will get to in a little bit. So the police search the home, and they notice a screen was cut that would allow an intruder to enter the property through the garage and then into the unlocked door going into the utility room. So here's just a safety tip. My garage door opener, you cannot see by looking in my car, number one. Mm-hmm. Right. Number two, I always lock the door to the utility room at night. No, if anyone breaks in my car and finds the garage door opener, they will not be able to get into my house through the garage because I always lock that door at night.
Yeah, I typically lock that one.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm by myself, I always do.
So she also told police that it wasn't until she finished chasing the intruder that she noticed that she and her boys were stabbed and that her screams woke up Darren, who was upstairs with the infant. Some reports say that the infant was sleeping in the bed with Darren, and then others say the baby was in his crib and Darren was in the master bedroom or in the nursery. So I have no idea. Either way, he was upstairs during the attack. Darlie was taken to the hospital. Her wounds were tended to. She had her throat cut in a diagonal direction. She had a stab wound on the lower part of her right forearm, her dominant side, and then a stab wound over here in the right shoulder area. She was placed in ICU, and that's where most of the photos come from when she's in the hospital, and she was told after surgery what happened with her boys. So let me bring up that infamous photo of her with her wounds. And we'll get into some of the optics here.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the wound right here. You can also see blood. And then you can see this wound right here. And then the knife wound is on her right side diagonal. So if I was to go up like this, that's the knife wound. So it's lower on... I'm sorry. It'd be this way. Because the wound was on her right shoulder area. And then, so it's like this. Okay? Which I find interesting. But wouldn't that be
someone with the left hand?
I don't think it would be anybody that's behind you cutting your throat.
Oh, cutting your throat behind you.
Because if someone gets behind you, they're going to go straight across.
Uh-huh.
So, we'll get into that.
Well, unless she was wiggling around.
Yeah. Well, from her story, she wasn't.
Right.
Okay. Then the infamous silly string video. So a week after the murders, on June 14th, a local news media released footage of the Routiers and their family at Devin and Damon's gravesite celebrating what would have been Devin's 7th birthday. You've got Darlie smacking gum, laughing, and spraying silly string on his grave. Up to that point, most of the public believed there was an intruder. Once they saw that footage, nope, they turned on her.
Though I saw her interviewed after that. Mm-hmm. They brought it up. Of course, everyone did. And it was probably that special you saw when she's death row and she had said something to the effect that Well, that wasn't my suggestion. I was so devastated. Her cousin or mother, someone said, hey, let's do that. It's his birthday.
You know. He loved Silly String.
He loves Silly String. And so that's how it was.
That's one of those things that I'm not sure I could decide guilt or innocence mm-hmm. on. I think I would definitely be like, now that's a little bit interesting. But
not normal.
No, because like just losing my dad, I couldn't imagine doing anything fun like that at his grave. And so I'm thinking a child, I wouldn't be able to either. But you can't really go on that because we don't know how different people are. And so if they're like, well, he loves Silly String, let's do that.
They and she also agreed. Yeah.
Didn't play the rest of the video that had everybody crying
yes.
and bawling. So
even before and after, she said they didn't play that.
Exactly.
They played the worst thing. But neither
did her defense.
Which is interesting, I think.
It is very interesting.
Wonder why. Do you know? We're going to get to that?
I wonder why, too. Oh. No. I just find that interesting.
Yeah, that tape was devastating to her.
Oh, it was.
And that whole case for her.
I think no one would imagine a mother doing Silly String at her recently stabbed to death son's grave.
But if you're distraught and I don't know.
Okay, so what we're going to do is play the Silly String video.
Some physical evidence from the home, but also admit they have as many questions as answers.
It's like something we've watched on the news. We never thought one day it hit us.
It's scary to think that you know, I don't think they have any suspects yet.
The first thing you look at are who are logical suspects. In the death and injury of children, particularly in their own home, it tends to be one of the parents.
I think it's fair to say at the very beginning, everyone was a potential suspect. But Darren, his version of events that he'd been upstairs with the baby appeared to be accurate. And secondly, she had never told anyone.
I've seen him before.
That he had been the assailant.
Ruthier insisted that an unknown intruder attacked her and the children and got away.
Darley's initial statement doesn't have a lot of detail. Somebody harming my children, somebody harming me.
When the police were there, they saw a cut screen in the garage, which seems to indicate that someone cut the screen from the outside, stepped through the screen, and headed for the main part of the house. And they found bloody footprints on the kitchen floor, broken glass, bloody fingerprints, and blood everywhere.
She said that she had fought off the attack. The only description of the attacker was a white male wearing dark clothing. And that she said she struggled with him and that he left towards the garage.
Are you looking at this for one person?
Well, based on her statement, yes. You know, that's where we're starting from.
So the first place they're going to go is go to the hospital to try to get anything they can from her.
I do remember the two officers standing over the bed, asking me questions left and right about Darren. I was scared because, to me, it was real easy to see what they were trying to get at.
When I got to work, one of the nurses came into my office and said, I need to make you aware of this patient that we have. We're trying to protect her because we don't know who did this to her. And we want to be sure she's safe.
She was bruised from her wrist up to her armpit.
You know, she was afraid to be by herself.
Dottie was scared to death. I ain't kidding, I've never seen anybody that scared before. Somebody tried to kill her, killed her kids. They're out there.
A last goodbye to two little boys, Devin, who would have turned 7 this week, and his 5-year-old brother Damon, stabbed as they slept in their home with their parents close by.
I remember going in and we were just all holding Darlie up, keeping her from falling to the ground. We chose to bury them together in one casket. Now they'll walk through heaven together.
At the end of the service, balloons were released into a clear blue sky, a tribute to innocence lost.
Darren and Darlie fully cooperated with police and conducted several interviews, seemingly unaware that they were starting to suspect Darlie.
They told us that they had hundreds of leads that they were looking into. They told us that this man had left fingerprints, that they had found flesh underneath my fingernails. They were indicating to us in every possible way that, you know, that it was just going to be a little bit of time that they were going to find this man.
The public had been supportive of her up to this point. And then there's this local news footage that comes out.
About a week after the murders on June 14th, the Routiers hold a birthday party at the cemetery for Devin, who would have turned 7 that day. And a local television station went out and caught it.
And I said, Darlie, Devin always had the most wonderful birthday parties, and we know that he's in heaven. And I said, let's just, for one day, try and get through it without crying a lot.
We had a graveside prayer service and then later had kind of a birthday party because Devin's birthday invitations had already gone out. Some of the neighborhood kids came.
Happy birthday to you.
They spray Silly String, which took maybe 20 seconds. They sang Happy Birthday. And you hear Darlie and Darren both saying,
love you, Devin and Damon.
You know, just like they're still there.
Why the confetti? Why the balloons? Why the happy birthday song?
Well, because even though we're sad because Devin and Damon aren't here, we try to hang on to what we can to keep, to get us through these times.
And I recall how shocked I was at the sight of that.
Same.
And I wasn't the only one who was shocked. Lead prosecutor Greg Davis was shocked as well.
I was really taken aback by her demeanor. I tell you, as a parent, I found it disgusting.
She was smiling and chewing gum, spraying the Silly String around. And just as a mother, I thought, that's just not appropriate. I mean, what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Worst thing she could have done.
It is. And we're going to get to the bruise as well.
You know what I found interesting, though? Devin said her children, not that I ever suspected him, but he said when they were talking about the death of her children, someone came and killed her children.
Yeah.
I thought that was an odd statement, but they both did odd things. So
they did.
Might be their personalities.
Now, this video is what solidified for investigators that something was up. And so they arrest her for first degree murder, which I believe I've got the perp walk. Here it is.
But like you said, they did not see the beginning of the tape or the end of the tape. It might have changed minds, but it was a bad tape.
Well, the prosecutors did. They saw the entire tape.
Oh, the public, though. Public opinion.
They presented, because it was kind of lengthy, they presented what was more advantageous to their case to the jury, because the defense counsel has the option to show the remainder, and they did not. That's so I don't know if it was something more incriminating in there, if they felt like the jury would not care that the Silly String, like, let's don't draw any more attention to the fact that you did that. You know, like, I don't know what their reasoning was, but they did not show the rest of it.
I do think a reasonable parent, though, wouldn't feel like doing that, wouldn't do that. I would not, especially with the news around.
Well, the smack
and
gum.
I would not do it. Smack and gum and reporters there. And I just don't think I could function.
I wouldn't be able to function. So we all know she was found guilty,
mm-hmm.
and she was sentenced to death. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk us through this part, the evidence that supports her innocence.
And what year was that?
Oh, I don't know.
I forgot. It's been so long. Wasn't it in the...
June 6, 1996.
Okay,
so here's the evidence for innocence. Let's start with the silly string video, because that seems to be the biggest bone of contention, right? Supporters always point out that the prosecution didn't tell the full story. They didn't show the police video that revealed she was obviously upset at her boy's funeral, previous to the silly string. She stated that Devin loved silly string, and since it would have been his birthday, they wanted to make sure he had it that day. So a lot of people they think that she was convicted on that one video, okay? The defense presented medical and psychiatric experts who stated they believe she was telling the truth about the intruder and that her wounds were not self-inflicted, as the prosecution and detectives were trying to say. However, the experts and the defense did not present any forensic testimony to rebut the state staging theory, which we're going to get into. So they just had experts saying there's no way she could have done this, but they didn't have anything forensically to support their thoughts. And that's a problem for me. Ted Bundy duped his psychiatrist in jail many, many times. So that is really not any evidence to me.
You know what? This go back to the funeral. Do you find it odd that the casket was open? Because I've seen some true crime shows. Usually when children are involved, they never have the casket open.
Well, no, I don't, because their faces weren't harmed. Still. And I think they could have dressed them, and maybe they just wanted to give them a last kiss. Goodbye. Right. Okay. You know. But no, I don't find that interesting either. I'm not sure what I would do. I mean, that would be a tough decision.
Mm-hmm.
Darlie's supporters also point to the fact that there wasn't any reason or motive to kill her boys. They had a $5,000 life insurance policy each, so why kill them for a measly $5,000 when she could have killed Darren and gotten $800,000? Like, the funerals cost more than the life insurance they would get.
See, that's where you sort of are like, well, did she? Because really no motive.
I don't think the motive was money.
Okay.
Yeah. Then there was an unknown bloody fingerprint found on the coffee table that didn't belong to Darlie, and another on the door to the utility room suggesting an intruder, so they say that. The state claimed that they found a knife in the butcher block that had fiberglass fibers and rubber on it, and that was the knife that was used to cut the screen, making it appear that an intruder entered there. But that the fiber was also consistent with the fiberglass brush that was used to dust for prints.
Oh, that's interesting. What is that look for?
I'm trying to maintain neutrality. Hang on, let me get a little drink here of my cocoa.
Yeah, this was a crazy case, man.
Next is the infamous sock and the timeline. Experts stated that Damon would have only have lived, that's the youngest that was crawling for his life, that he would have only lived 8 to 9 minutes from his injuries. Darlie was on the phone with 911 for almost 6 minutes, and that would have left only 2 minutes to run 75 yards to deposit a sock with the boy's blood on it by a poly can located in the alley. So there's actually a diagram that I have of this. Let me see if I can find it.
And you say you tried this out.
I did. I ran it. So here's the house right here, and mm-hmm. this is the alley, and the sock was right here. So 75 yards. They said there was no way Darlie would have had time to take his sock with just the boy's blood on it, stab them, run, and drop off the sock, then come back, cut her own throat, stab herself, and stage the crime scene. Her defense neglected to present that a man matching the attacker's description was seen 10 minutes from Darlie's home after 2 a.m. that night. The prosecution points to Damon's blood handprint on the couch that had been wiped away. So that blood I showed you on the couch, Damon's handprint was there. It was a partial handprint they could find with blood on it, but it had been wiped away. Must be on the other.
That's interesting.
Oh, and then there's the sock. And so the little bit of blood is right here.
The sock puzzles me, though.
Why does it puzzle you?
Well, it puzzles me because why would a sock be that far from the house? I mean, was it sticking to someone's foot?
Exactly. Was it,
you know, was he carrying one sock, the intruder, and then just dropped it?
Yes, the sock is interesting to me because, like, if you think that the intruder used his sock as a glove, there would have been more blood on it.
Mm-hmm.
So what, did he just pick it up and decide to take it and run it down and deposit it next to a poly can? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And the sock belonged to, I believe, Darren.
Darren.
So that's a weird thing. I'm, you know, like if you're running and your shoes come off, I could see that because you're running so fast to get away from the murder you just committed. But your sock?
Well, I know it's been almost 30 years, so I don't remember a lot. You can correct me, but the sock, was that not found like hours later or the next day?
Mm-mm.
It wasn't? It was that night?
It was that night. Mm-hmm.
It's just weird. Sure. I don't know why anyone would be carrying a sock, or even if it stuck to someone's foot and they're running, it would come off or there'd be more blood.
Exactly.
It's a little weird.
Mm-hmm. And then this part of the couch is where they found the partial print, and they knew that it had been wiped off.
Aww.
So he was trying to either get to her or get away from her. Her supporters point to the prosecution saying that a blonde hair found on the cut screen was Darlie's, but they actually discovered it was Rowlett police officer Sarah Jones' hair. So supporters say there's no evidence that Sarah Jones was there or worked the scene. And if she was there, why would her hair be on the screen?
Right.
So that's a little bit of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Her supporters state that Darlie was a great mom and that the kids in the neighborhood loved hanging out there because it was the Nintendo house. They always had fun, you know, when they were there.
When you're young, there's always one house.
Yeah.
That you like going to.
Want to hang out with. The prosecutors and police want to know why the outdoor motion light wasn't on when they arrived if there was an intruder. So when the light was triggered, it stayed on for 18 minutes.
Oh.
If the intruder had come through the garage window, he would have set off the light. But the supporters say, well, it was attached to their redwood home spot at the very back of the yard and was far enough away from the garage that it would not have set off the motion detection.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're saying that if the intruder went out that way, this is the side where the garage is, the light is, that if he would have come through this area, he would have set it off. So I think I have one where they've got the spa and another picture of it. So this is the garage right here.
That's the front of the house?
Back.
Oh, the back of the house. Okay.
And then this right here, this area is where the redwood spa was. So they're saying that if the intruder came out of that window, he would have triggered the light that was back there. See the garage doors,
mm-hmm,
right here?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it would have been on because remember the 8 to 9 minutes that Damon would have been alive, the police were there in 6. So the light should have been on for another 12.
Did you say going out the back window when he left?
Well, no, the garage window, where the screen was cut.
I would think he would just push the garage open or something, not go back through the window. Right?
I don't. I mean, you might be seen by neighbors if you go out the garage door.
Well, that's
true,
so
you
got
to go out through the side like you came in.
Yeah.
And then finally, detectives did not investigate Darren, who had previously committed insurance fraud and wanted to do so again. He had asked Darlie's stepfather if he knew anyone who would be willing to break into their house and fake a burglary. He would file a claim and hide his possessions. Then once the claim cleared, get his stuff back. Supposedly, a YouTuber interviewed Barbara Jovell, a close friend of Darlie's who later testified against her at trial, who stated that the Retire family was flying to Altoona, PA, in the last spring or early summer of 96. And while they were away, she was to feed the animals, water plants, etc., and discover the burglary and call the police. But she refused. And then why didn't Darren hear anything as his family was being brutally murdered? So there has been some suspicion on Darren, but I think he's been pretty much cleared as having any role in that. But I could see how people would be like, why didn't he hear his family being slaughtered? You know, did he hire someone to break in for an insurance claim and they were crazy as, you know, heck, and decide to kill Darlie and the boys downstairs? You know, I could see how people would have some suspicions on him.
Were asleep. She was asleep until she woke up. So maybe the kids didn't scream, and then he just remembers hearing her screams, and then he started screaming. I could see it could happen.
I can too. And also, was he a light sleeper?
That's true.
You know, so if he was a light sleeper, I could see that possibly. I mean, I'm sorry, a deep sleeper that he may not have heard it.
Me too.
Most true crime shows on this case and articles, including great magazines like Texas Monthly, are in favor of her innocence.
Really?
Yep. One true crime author wrote a book outlining her guilt and then later changed her mind and states that she believes Darlie is innocent.
I remember. That author was interviewed.
So she now donates all the proceeds to charity. So, okay, with what we've done so far, because now we're going to get into evidence that supports her guilt, but with what we've discovered and discussed so far, what are you thinking?
Well, if this is all I knew, I would say innocent, maybe, because the silly string would get me and the door was cut from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of odd.
Yeah. And did you notice was cut?
Like that, right? Straight down.
It's a little interesting. Yeah,
straight down. Mm-hmm.
So I think even though it's a little bit sooner than we normally stop, I would like to devote the full part two. I don't know if there's going to be a part three, but for sure a part two to the other evidence. So I think we'll go ahead and end this episode.
Good
if you're
place
with
to
it.
Stop. Yep.
All right. So now you're going to have to do two today.
Be safe.
Nope.
Dang it, I always say that. Mine's
No, what's Selena's?
Be smart.
Mm-hmm.
Be rude.
Mm-hmm. And don't be a victim.
Are you proud?
No, because you said be safe first, so I'm not proud.
I always say.
Outline of a Murder is a Mr. Joseph production. What do you think, Joseph?